Even with mostly full batteries, I had set up the solar cells when I stopped. Why not? Free energy. I'd worked it out in advance. On the way here, two stacks of solar panels occupied the whole roof. On the way back, I'll use a single stack to make room for the probe. It's a little more dangerous. The stack might fall over. Also, the cells will be a pain in the ass to stack that high, but I'll get it done. I can't just throw a rope over the rover and hoist Pathfinder up the side. I don't want to break it. I mean, it's already broken. They lost contact in 1997, but I don't want to break it more. I came up with a solution, but I'd done enough physical labor for one day, and I was almost out of daylight. Now I'm in the rover, looking at Sojourner. It seems all right. No physical damage on the outside. Doesn't look like anything got too baked by the sunlight. The dense layer of Mars crap all over it protected it from long-term solar damage. You may think Sojourner isn't much use to me. It can't communicate with Earth. Why do I care about it? Because it has a lot of moving parts. If I establish a link with NASA, I can talk to them by holding a page of text up to the lander's camera. But how would they talk to me? The only moving parts on the lander are the high-gain antenna, which would have to stay pointed at Earth, and the camera boom. We'd have to come up with a system where NASA could talk by rotating the camera head. It would be painfully slow. But Sojourner has six independent wheels that rotate reasonably fast. It'll be much easier to communicate with those. I could draw letters on the wheels. NASA could rotate them to spell things at me. That all assumes I can get the lander's radio working at all. Time to turn in. I've got a lot of back-breaking physical labor to do tomorrow. I'll need my rest. Log entry. Sol 83. Oh, God, I'm sore. But it's the only way I could think of to get the lander safely onto the roof. I built a ramp out of rocks and sand, just like the ancient Egyptians did. And if there's one thing Ares Vallis has, it's rocks. First, I experimented to find out how steep the grade could be. I piled some rocks near the lander and dragged it up the pile and back down again. Then I made the pile steeper and made sure I could drag the lander up and down. I repeated this over and over until I found the best grade for my ramp, 30 degrees. Anything more was too risky. I might lose my grip and send the lander tumbling down the ramp. The roof of the rover is over 2 meters from the ground, so I'd need a ramp almost 4 meters long. I got to work. The first few rocks were easy, then they started feeling heavier and heavier. Hard physical labor in a spacesuit is murder. Everything's more effort because you're lugging 20 kilograms of suit around with you, and your movement is limited. I was panting within 20 minutes. So I cheated. I upped my O2 mixture. It really helped a lot. Probably shouldn't make that a habit. Also, I didn't get hot. The suit leaks heat faster than my body could ever generate it. The heating system is what keeps the temperature bearable. My physical labor just meant the suit didn't have to heat itself as much. After hours of grueling labor, I finally got the ramp made. Nothing more than a pile of rocks against the rover, but it reached the roof. I stomped up and down the ramp first to make sure it was stable, then I dragged the lander up. It worked like a charm. I was all smiles as I lashed the lander in place. I made sure it was firmly secured and even stacked the solar cells in a big single stack. Why waste the ramp? But then it hit me. The ramp would collapse as I drove away, and the rocks might damage the wheels or undercarriage. I'd have to take the ramp apart to keep that from happening. Tearing the ramp down was easier than putting it up. I didn't need to carefully put each rock in a stable place. I just dropped them wherever. It only took me an hour. And now I'm done. I'll start heading home tomorrow with my new 200-kilogram broken radio. Chapter 10. Log entry. Sol 90. 7 days since Pathfinder, and 7 days closer to home. As I'd hoped, my inbound tracks gave me a path back to Lewis Valley. Then it was 4 sols of easy driving. The hills to my left made it impossible to get lost, and the terrain was smooth. But all good things come to an end. I'm back in Acidalia Planitia now. My outgoing tracks are long gone. It's been 16 days since I was last here. Even timid weather would clear them out in that time. On my way out, I should have made a pile of rocks every time I camped. The land is so flat they'd be visible for kilometers. On second thought, thinking back to making that damn ramp, ugh. So once again I am the desert wanderer, using Phobos to navigate and hoping I don't stray too far. All I need to do is get within 40 kilometers of the Hab and I'll pick up the beacon. I'm feeling optimistic. For the first time, I think I might get off this planet alive. With that in mind, I'm taking soil and rock samples every time I do an EVA. At first, I figured it was my duty. If I survive, geologists will love me for it. But then it started to get fun. Now, as I drive, I look forward to that simple act of bagging rocks. It just feels nice to be an astronaut again. That's all it is. Not a reluctant farmer, not an electrical engineer, not a long-haul trucker. An astronaut. I'm doing what astronauts do. I missed it. Log entry. Sol 92. I got 2 seconds of signal from the Hab beacon today, then lost it. But it's a good sign. I've been traveling vaguely north-northwest for 2 days. I must be a good 100 kilometers from the Hab. It's a miracle I got any signal at all. Must have been a moment of perfect weather conditions. During the boring-ass days, I'm working my way through the $6 million man from Commander Lewis's inexhaustible collection of 70s tripe. I just watched an episode where Steve Austin fights a Russian Venus probe that landed on Earth by mistake. As an expert in interplanetary travel, I can tell you there are no scientific inaccuracies in the story. It's quite common for probes to land on the wrong planet. Also, the probe's large, flat panel hull is ideal for the high-pressure Venusian atmosphere. And as we all know, probes often refuse to obey directives, choosing instead to attack humans on sight. So far, Pathfinder hasn't tried to kill me, but I'm keeping an eye on it. Log entry, Sol 93. I found the Hab signal today. No more chance to get lost. According to the computer, I'm 24,718 meters away. I'll be home tomorrow. Even if the rover has a catastrophic failure, I'll be fine. I can walk to the Hab from here. I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but I am really fucking sick of being in this rover. I spent so much time seated or lying down, my back is all screwed up. Of all my crewmates, the one I miss most right now is Beck. He'd fix my aching back. Though he'd probably give me a bunch of shit about it.
Why didn't you do stretching exercises? Your body is important. Eat more fiber, or whatever.
At this point, I'd welcome a health lecture. During training, we had to practice the dreaded missed orbit scenario. In the event of a second stage failure during MAV ascent, we'd be in orbit, but too low to reach Hermes. We'd be skimming the upper atmosphere, so our orbit would rapidly decay. NASA would remotely operate Hermes and bring it in to pick us up. Then we'd get the hell out of there before Hermes caught too much drag. To drill this, they made us stay in the MAV simulator for 3 miserable days. 6 people in an ascent vehicle originally designed for a 23-minute flight. It got a little cramped, and by a little cramped, I mean we wanted to kill each other. I'd give anything to be in that cramped capsule with those guys again. Man, I hope I get Pathfinder working again. Log entry, Sol 94. Home sweet home! Today I write from my gigantic cavernous Hab. The first thing I did when I got in was wave my arms wildly while running in circles. Felt great. I was in that damn rover for 22 sols and couldn't even walk without suiting up. I'll need to endure twice that to get to Ares 4, but that's a problem for later. After a few celebratory laps around the Hab, it was time to get to work. First, I fired up the oxygenator and atmospheric regulator. Checking the air levels, everything looked good. There was still CO2, so the plants hadn't suffocated without me exhaling for them. Naturally, I did an exhaustive check on my crops, and they're all healthy. I added my bags of shit to the manure pile. Lovely smell, I can tell you. But once I mixed some soil in, it died down to tolerable levels. I dumped my box of pee into the water reclaimer. I'd been gone over 3 weeks and had left the Hab very humid for the sake of the crops. That much water in the air can cause any amount of electrical problems, so I spent the next few hours doing full systems checks on everything. Then I kind of lounged around for a while. I wanted to spend the rest of the day relaxing, but I had more to do. After suiting up, I went out to the rover and dragged the solar cells off the roof. Over the next few hours, I put them back where they belonged, wiring them into the HAB's power grid. Getting the lander off the roof was a hell of a lot easier than getting it up there. I detached a strut from the MAV platform and dragged it over to the rover. By leaning it against the hull and digging the other end into the ground for stability, I had a ramp. I should have brought that strut with me to the Pathfinder site. And live and learn. There's no way to get the lander in the airlock. It's just too big. I could probably dismantle it and bring it in a piece at a time, but there's a pretty compelling reason not to. With no magnetic field, Mars has no defense against harsh solar radiation. If I were exposed to it, I'd get so much cancer the cancer would have cancer. So the HAB canvas shields from electromagnetic waves. This means the HAB itself would block any transmissions if the lander were inside. Speaking of cancer, it was time to get rid of the RTG. It pained me to climb back into the rover, but it had to be done. If the RTG ever broke open, it would kill me to death. NASA decided 4 kilometers was the safe distance, and I wasn't about to second-guess them. I drove back to where Commander Lewis had originally dumped it, ditched it in the same hole, and drove back to the HAB. I'll start work on the lander tomorrow. Now to enjoy a good long sleep in an actual cot, with the comforting knowledge that when I wake, my morning piss will go into a toilet. Log entry, Sol 95. Today was all about repairs. The Pathfinder mission ended because the lander had an unknown critical failure. Once JPL lost contact with the lander, they had no idea what became of Sojourner. It might be in better shape. Maybe it just needs power. Power it couldn't get with its solar panels hopelessly caked with dust. I set the little rover on my workbench and pried open a panel to peek inside. The battery was a lithium thionyl chloride non-rechargeable. I figured that out from some subtle clues, the shape of the connection points, the thickness of the insulation, and the fact that it had lithium thionyl chloride non-rechargeable written on it. I cleaned the solar panels thoroughly, then aimed a small, flexible lamp directly at them. The battery's long dead, but the panels might be okay, and Sojourner can operate directly off them. We'll see if anything happens. Then it was time to take a look at Sojourner's daddy. I suited up and headed out. On most landers, the weak point is the battery. It's the most delicate component, and when it dies, there's no way to recover. Landers can't just shut down and wait when they have low batteries. Their electronics won't work unless they're at a minimum temperature, so they have heaters to keep the electronics warm. It's a problem that rarely comes up on Earth, but hey, Mars. Over time, the solar panels get covered with dust. Then, winter brings colder temperatures and less daylight. This all combines into a big fuck you from Mars to your lander. Eventually, it's using more power to keep warm than it's getting from the meager daylight that makes it through the dust. Once the battery runs down, the electronics get too cold to operate, and the whole system dies. The solar panels will recharge the battery somewhat, but there's nothing to tell the system to reboot. Anything that could make that decision would be electronics, which would not be working. Eventually, the now unused battery will lose its ability to retain charge. That's the usual cause of death, and I sure hope it's what killed Pathfinder. I piled some leftover parts of the MDV into a makeshift table and ramp. Then I dragged the lander up to my new outdoor workbench. Working in an EVA suit is annoying enough. Bending over the whole time would have been torture. I got my toolkit and started poking around. Opening the outer panel wasn't too hard, and I identified the battery easily enough. JPL labels everything. It's a 40-amp-hour gold-zinc battery with an optimal voltage of 1.5. Wow, they really made those things run on nothing back then. I detached the battery and headed back inside. I checked it with my electronics kit, and sure enough, it's dead. Dead, dead. I could shuffle across a carpet and hold more charge. But I knew what the lander needed, 1.5 volts. Compared to the makeshift crap I've been gluing together since Sol 6, this was a breeze. I have voltage controllers in my kit. It only took me 15 minutes to put a controller on a reserve power line, then another hour to go outside and run the line to where the battery used to be. Then there's the issue of heat. It's a good idea to keep electronics above negative 40 degrees Celsius. The temperature today is a brisk negative 63 degrees Celsius. The battery was big and easy to identify, but I had no clue where the heaters were. Even if I knew, it'd be too risky to hook them directly to power. I could easily fry the whole system. So instead, I went to good old Spare Parts Rover 1 and stole its environment heater. I've gutted that poor Rover so much it looks like I parked it in a bad part of town. I lugged the heater to my outdoor workbench and hooked it to hab power. Then I rested it in the lander where the battery used to be. Now I wait and hope. Log entry, Sol 96. I was really hoping I'd wake up to a functional lander, but no such luck. Its high-gain antenna is right where I last saw it. Why does that matter? Well, I'll tell you. If the lander comes back to life, and that's a big if, it'll try to establish contact with Earth. Problem is, nobody's listening. It's not like the Pathfinder team is hanging around JPL just in case their long-dead probe is repaired by a wayward astronaut. The Deep Space Network and SETI are my best bets for picking up the signal. If either of them caught a blip from Pathfinder, they'd tell JPL. JPL would quickly figure out what was going on, especially when they triangulated the signal to my landing site. They'd tell the lander where Earth is, and it would angle the high-gain antenna appropriately. That there, the angling of the antenna, is how I'll know if it linked up. So far, no action. There's still hope. Any number of reasons could be delaying things. The rover heater is designed to heat air at one atmosphere, and the thin Martian air severely hampers its ability to work, so the electronics might need more time to warm up. Also, Earth is only visible during the day. I, hopefully, fixed the lander yesterday evening. It's morning now, so most of the intervening time has been night. No Earth. Sojourners showing no signs of life either. It's been in the nice warm environment of the hab all night, with plenty of light on its sparkling clean solar cells. Maybe it's running an extended self-check, or staying still until it hears from the lander or something. I'll just have to put it out of my mind for now. Pathfinder log. Sol 0. Boot sequence initiated. Time. 00:00, 00:00, 00:00. Loss of power detected. Time, date unreliable. Loading OS. VXWare operating system. Copyright. Wind River Systems performing hardware check. Internal temperature. Negative 34 degrees Celsius. External temperature. Non-functional. Battery. Full. High gain. Okay. Low gain. Okay. Wind sensor. Non-functional. Meteorology. Non-functional. ASI. Non-functional. Imager. Okay. Rover ramp. Non-functional. Solar A. Non-functional. Solar B. Non-functional. Solar C. Non-functional. Hardware check complete. Broadcasting status. Listening for telemetry signal. Listening for telemetry signal. Listening for telemetry signal. Signal acquired. Chapter 11. Something's coming in. Yes. Yes. It's Pathfinder. The crowded room burst into applause and cheers. Venkat slapped an unknown technician on the back while Bruce pumped his fist in the air. The ad hoc Pathfinder Control Center was an accomplishment in itself. Over the last 20 days, a team of JPL engineers had worked around the clock to piece together antiquated computers, repair broken components, network everything, and install hastily made software that allowed the old systems to interact with the modern deep space network. The room itself was formerly a conference room. JPL had no space ready for the sudden need. Already jam-packed with computers and equipment, the cramped space had turned positively claustrophobic with the many spectators now squeezing into it. One Associated Press camera team pressed against the back wall, trying and failing to stay out of everyone's way while recording the auspicious moment. The rest of the media would have to satisfy themselves with the live AP feed and await a press conference. Venkat turned to Bruce. "God damn, Bruce.
You really pulled a rabbit out of your hat this time. Good work.
I'm just the director, Bruce said modestly. Thank the guys who got all this stuff working.
Oh, I will, Venkat beamed. But first, I have to talk to my new best friend.
Turning to the headseted man at the communications console, Venkat asked, What's your name, new best friend?
Tim, he said, not taking his eyes off the screen.
What now? Venkat asked.
We sent the return telemetry automatically. It'll get there in just over 11 minutes. Once it does, Pathfinder will start high-gain transmissions, so it'll be 22 minutes till we hear from it again.
Venkat's got a doctorate in physics, Tim, Bruce said. You don't need to explain transmission time to him.
Tim shrugged. You can never tell with managers.
What was the transmission we got? Venkat asked.
Just the bare bones. A hardware self-check. It's got a lot of non-functional systems, 'cause they were on the panels Watney removed.
What about the camera?
It says the imager's working. We'll have it take a panorama as soon as we can.
Log entry. Sol 97.
It worked. Holy shit, it worked!
I just suited up and checked the lander. The high-gain antenna is angled directly at Earth. Pathfinder has no way of knowing where it is, so it has no way of knowing where Earth is. The only way for it to find out is getting a signal. They know I'm alive. I don't even know what to say. This was an insane plan, and somehow it worked. I'm going to be talking to someone again. I spent 3 months as the loneliest man in history, and it's finally over. Sure, I might not get rescued, but I won't be alone. The whole time I was recovering Pathfinder, I imagined what this moment would be like. I figured I'd jump up and down a bit, cheer, maybe flip off the ground, because this whole damn planet is my enemy. But that's not what happened. When I got back to the HAB and took off the EVA suit, I sat down in the dirt and cried, bawled like a little kid for several minutes. I finally settled down to mild sniffling and then felt a deep calm. It was a good calm. It occurs to me, now that I might live, I have to be more careful about logging embarrassing moments. How do I delete log entries? There's no obvious way. I'll get to it later. I've got more important things to do. I've got people to talk to.
Venkat grinned as he took the podium in the JPL press room.
We received the high-gain response just over half an hour ago, he said to the assembled press. We immediately directed Pathfinder to take a panoramic image. Hopefully, Watney has some kind of message for us. Questions?
The sea of reporters raised their hands.
Kathy, let's start with you, Venkat said, pointing to the CNN reporter.
Thanks, she said. Have you had any contact with the Sojourner rover?
Unfortunately, no, he replied. The lander hasn't been able to connect to Sojourner, and we have no way to contact it directly.
What might be wrong with Sojourner?
I can't even speculate, Venkat said. After spending that long on Mars, anything could be wrong with it.
Best guess?
Our best guess is he took it into the HAB. The lander's signal wouldn't be able to reach Sojourner through HAB canvas.
Pointing to another reporter, he said,
You, there. Marty West, NBC News, Marty said. How will you communicate with Watney once everything's up and running?
That'll be up to Watney, said Venkat. All we have to work with is the camera. He can write notes and hold them up, but how we talk back is trickier.
How so? Marty asked.
Because all we have is the camera platform. That's the only moving part. There are plenty of ways to get information across with just the platform's rotation, but no way to tell Watney about them. He'll have to come up with something and tell us. We'll follow his lead.
Pointing to the next reporter, he said, Go ahead.
Jill Holbrook, BBC. With a 32-minute round trip and nothing but a single rotating platform to talk with, it'll be a dreadfully slow conversation, won't it?
Yes, it will, Venkat confirmed. It's early morning in Acidalia Planitia right now, and just past 3 a.m. here in Pasadena. We'll be here all night, and that's just for a start. No more questions for now. The panorama is due back in a few minutes. We'll keep you posted.
Before anyone could ask a follow-up, Venkat strode out the side door and hurried down the hall to the makeshift Pathfinder Control Center. He pressed through the throng to the communications console.
Anything, Tim?
Totally, he replied.
but we're staring at this black screen because it's way more interesting than pictures from Mars.
You're a smartass, Tim, Venkat said.
Noted.
Bruce pushed his way forward.
Still another few seconds on the clock, he said.
The time passed in silence.
Getting something, Tim said.
Yep, it's the panoramic.
Sighs of relief and muted conversation replaced tense silence as the image began coming through. It filled out from left to right at a snail's pace due to the bandwidth limitations of the antique probe sending it.
Martian surface, Venkat said as the lines slowly filled in. More surface.
Edge of the hab,
Bruce said, pointing to the screen.
Hab, Venkat smiled. More hab now. More hab.
Is that a message?
That's a message!
As the image grew, it revealed a handwritten note suspended at the camera's height by a thin metal rod.
We got a note from Mark, Venkat announced to the room.
Applause filled the room, then quickly died down.
What's it say?
Someone asked. Venkat leaned closer to the screen.
It says, I write questions here. Are you receiving?
Okay, said Bruce.
That's what it says, Venkat shrugged.
Another note, said Tim, pointing to the screen as more of the image came through.
Venkat leaned in again.
This one says, point here for yes.
He folded his arms.
All right, we have communication with Mark. Tim, point the camera at yes. Then start taking pictures at 10-minute intervals until he puts another question up.
Log entry. Sol 97. 2.
Yes. They said yes. I haven't been this excited about a yes since prom night.
Okay, calm down. I have limited paper to work with. These cards were intended to label batches of samples. I have about 50 cards. I can use both sides, and if it comes down to it, I can reuse them by scratching out the old question. The Sharpie I'm using will last much longer than the cards, so ink isn't a problem, but I have to do all my writing in the hab. I don't know what kind of hallucinogenic crap that ink is made of, but I'm pretty sure it would boil off in Mars's atmosphere. I'm using old parts of the antenna array to hold the cards up. There's a certain irony to that.
We'll need to talk faster than yes-no questions every half hour. The camera can rotate 360 degrees, and I have plenty of antenna parts. Time to make an alphabet. But I can't just use the letters A through Z. 26 letters plus my question card would be 27 cards around the lander. Each one would only get 13 degrees of arc. Even if JPL points the camera perfectly, there's a good chance I won't know which letter they meant. So I'll have to use ASCII. That's how computers manage characters. Each character has a numerical code between 0 and 255. Values between 0 and 255 can be expressed as two hexadecimal digits. By giving me pairs of hex digits, they can send any character they like, including numbers, punctuation, etc. How do I know which values go with which characters? Because Johansson's laptop is a wealth of information. I knew she'd have an ASCII table in there somewhere. All computer geeks do. So I'll make cards for 0 through 9 and A through F. That makes 16 cards to place around the camera, plus the question card. 17 cards means over 21 degrees each. Much easier to deal with. Time to get to work. Spell with ASCII. 0 through F at 21 degree increments. We'll watch camera starting 1100 hours my time. When message done, return to this position. Wait 20 minutes after completion to take picture, so I can write and post reply. Repeat process at top of every hour. S-T-A-T-U-S. No physical problems. All hab components functional. Eating three-quarter rations. Successfully growing crops in hab with cultivated soil. Note, situation not Ares III crew's fault. Bad luck. H-O-W-A-L-I-V-E. Impaled by antenna fragment, knocked out by decompression, landed face down, blood sealed hole. Woke up after crew left. Biomonitor computer destroyed by puncture. Crew had reason to think me dead, not their fault.
C-R-O-P-S? Question mark. Long story. Extreme botany. Have 126 meters squared farmland growing potatoes. Will extend food supply, but not enough to last until Ares IV landing. Modified rover for long-distance travel. Plan to drive to Ares IV. WESAW-SATLITE. Government watching me with satellites? Need tinfoil hat. Also need faster way to communicate. Speak and spell taking all damn day. Any ideas? BRINGSJRNROUT. Sojourner rover brought out, placed 1 meter due north of lander. If you can contact it, I can draw hex numbers on the wheels and you can send me 6 bytes at a time. SJRNRNOTRSPND. Damn. Any other ideas? Need faster communication. WORKINGONIT. Earth is about to set. Resume 0800 hours my time tomorrow morning. Tell family I'm fine. Give crew my best. Tell Commander Lewis disco sucks. Venkat blinked his bleary eyes several times as he tried to organize the papers on his desk. His temporary desk at JPL was nothing more than a folding table set up in the back of a break room. People were in and out picking up snacks all day, but on the plus side, the coffee pot was nearby. "Excuse me," said a man approaching the table. "Yes, they're out of Diet Coke," Venkat said without looking up. "I don't know when site services refills the fridge."
"I'm actually here to talk to you, Dr. Kapoor."
"Huh?" said Venkat, looking up. He shook his head.
"Sorry, I was up all night."
He gulped his coffee.
"Who are you again?"
"Jack Trevor," said the thin, pale man before Venkat. "I work in software engineering."
"What can I do for you?"
"We have an idea for communication."
"I'm all ears."
"We've been looking through the old Pathfinder software. We got duplicate computers up and running for testing. Same computers they used to find a problem that almost killed the original mission. Real interesting story, actually. Turns out there was a priority inversion in Sojourner's thread management, and..."
"Focus, Jack," interrupted Venkat.
"Right. Well, thing is, Pathfinder has an OS update process, so we can change the software to anything we want."
"How does this help us?"
"Pathfinder has 2 communication systems. One to talk to us, the other to talk to Sojourner. We can change the second system to broadcast on the Ares III rover frequency, and we can have it pretend to be the beacon signal from the HAB."
"You can get Pathfinder talking to Mark's rover?"
"It's the only option. The HAB's radio is dead, but the rover has communications equipment made for talking to the HAB and the other rover. Problem is, to implement a new comm system, both ends of it need to have the right software running. We can remotely update Pathfinder, but not the rover."
"So," Venkat said, "you can get Pathfinder to talk to the rover, but you can't get the rover to listen or talk back."
"Right. Ideally, we want our text to show up on the rover screen, and whatever Watney types to be sent back to us. That requires a change to the rover software."
Venkat sighed. "What's the point of this discussion if we can't update the rover software?"
Jack grinned as he continued.
"We can't do the patch, but Watney can. We can just send the data and have him enter the update into the rover himself."
"How much data are we talking about?"
"I have guys working on the rover software right now. The patch file will be 20 meg minimum. We can send 1 byte to Watney every 4 seconds or so with the speaking spell. It'd take 3 years of constant broadcasting to get that patch across. Obviously, that's no good."
"But you're talking to me, so you have a solution, right?"
Venkat probed, resisting the urge to scream.
"Of course," Jack beamed. "Software engineers are sneaky bastards when it comes to data management."
"Enlighten me," said Venkat.
"Here's the clever part," Jack said conspiratorially. "The rover
currently parses the signal into bytes, then identifies the specific sequence the hab sends. That way, natural radio waves won't throw off the homing. If the bytes aren't right, the rover ignores them.
Okay, so what?
It means there's a spot in the code base where it's got the parsed bytes. We can insert a tiny bit of code, just 20 instructions, to write the parsed bytes to a log file before checking their validity.
Well, this sounds promising, Venkat said.
It is, Jack said excitedly. First, we update Pathfinder so it knows how to talk to the rover. Then we tell Watney exactly how to hack the rover software to add those 20 instructions. Then we have Pathfinder broadcast new software to the rover. The rover logs the bytes to a file. Finally, Watney launches the file as an executable and the rover patches itself.
Venkat furrowed his brow, taking in far more information than his sleep-deprived mind wanted to accept.
Jack said. You're not cheering or dancing.
So we just need to send Watney those 20 instructions? Venkat asked.
That, and how to edit the files, and where to insert the instructions in the files.
Just like that?
Just like that?
Venkat was silent for a moment.
Jack, I'm going to buy your whole team autographed Star Trek memorabilia.
I prefer Star Wars, he said, turning to leave. The original trilogy, of course.
Of course, Venkat said.
As Jack walked away, a woman approached Venkat's table.
Yes, Venkat said.
I can't find any Diet Coke. Are we out?
Yes, Venkat said. I don't know when Site Services refills the fridge.
Thanks, she said. Just as he was about to get back to work, his mobile rang. He groaned loudly at the ceiling as he snatched the phone from his desk.
Hello, he said as cheerfully as he could.
I need a picture of Watney.
Hi, Annie. Nice to hear from you, too. How are things back in Houston?
Cut the shit, Venkat. I need a picture.
It's not that simple, Venkat explained.
You're talking to him with a fucking camera. How hard can it be?
We spell out our message, wait 20 minutes, and then take a picture. Watney's back in the hab by then.
So tell him to be around when you take the next picture, Annie demanded.
We can only send one message per hour, and only when Acidalia Planitia is facing Earth, Venkat said. We're not going to waste a message just to tell him to pose for a photo. Besides, he'll be in his EVA suit. You won't even be able to see his face.
I need something, Venkat, Annie said. You've been in contact for 24 hours and the media is going apeshit. They want an image for the story. It'll be on every news site in the world.
You have the pictures of his notes. Make do with that.
Not enough, Annie said. The press is crawling down my throat for this. And up my ass. Both directions, Venkat. They're gonna meet in the middle.
It'll have to wait a few days. We're going to try and link Pathfinder to the rover computer.
A few days? Annie gasped. This is all anyone cares about right now. In the world. This is the biggest story since Apollo 13. Give me a fucking picture.
Venkat sighed.
I'll try to get it tomorrow.
Great, she said. Looking forward to it.
Log entry. Sol 98. I have to be watching the camera when it spells things out. It's half a byte at a time. So I watch a pair of numbers, then look them up on an ASCII cheat sheet I made. That's one letter. I don't want to forget my letters, so I scrape them into the dirt with a rod. The process of looking up a letter and scraping it in the dirt takes a couple of seconds. Sometimes when I look back at the camera, I've missed a number. I can usually guess it from context, but other times I just miss out. Today I got up hours earlier than I needed to. It was like Christmas morning. I could hardly wait for 0800 hours to roll around. I had breakfast, did some unnecessary checks on hab equipment, and read some Poirot. Finally the time came. CN HAKRVR 2 TLK 2 PTHFDR, PRP4, LONG, MSG. Yeah, took me a minute. Can hack rover to talk to Pathfinder. Prepare for long message. That took some mental gymnastics to work out, but it was great news. If we could get that set up, we'd only be limited by transmission time. I set up a note that said, Roger.
Not sure what they meant by long message, but I figured I better be ready. I went out 15 minutes before the top of the hour and smoothed out a big area of dirt. I found the longest antenna rod I had so I could reach into the smooth area without having to step on it. Then I stood by, waiting. At exactly the top of the hour, the message came. Capitals LNCH, lowercase HEXIDIT, capitals ONRVRCMP, comma, capitals OPENFILE, dash, forward slash, lowercase USR, forward slash LIB, forward slash HABCOMM dot SO, dash, capitals SCROLLTILIDXON, capitals LFTIS, colon, 2, capitals AAE, 5, comma, capitals OVRWRT, 141, capitals BYTSWTHDATA, WE apostrophe LL, SND, NXT, MSG, comma, capitals STAND, IN, VIEW, 4, capitals NXT, PIC, 20, capitals MIN, FTER, THS, DONE.
Jesus.
Okay. They want me to launch HexEdit on the rover's computer, then open the file forward slash user forward slash lib forward slash habcom.so, scroll until the index reading on the left of the screen is 2AAE5, then replace the bytes there with the 141-byte sequence NASA will send in the next message. Fair enough. Also, for some reason, they want me to hang around for the next pick. Not sure why. You can't see any part of me when I'm in the suit. Even the faceplate would reflect too much light. Still, it's what they want. I went back in and copied down the message for future reference. Then I wrote a short note and came back out. Usually I'd pin up the note and go back in, but this time I had to hang around for a photo op. I gave the camera a thumbs up to go along with my note, which read, "Hey." Blame the 70s TV.
"I ask for a picture. And I get the funds?" Annie asked, admonishing Venkat.
"You got your picture. Quit bitching," he said, cradling the phone on his shoulder.
He paid more attention to the schematics in front of him than the conversation.
"Eh?" Annie mocked. "Why would he do that?"
"Have you met Mark Watney?"
"Fine, fine," Annie said.
"But I want a pic of his face ASAP."
"Can't do that."
"Why not?"
"Because if he takes off his helmet, he'll die."
"Annie, I have to go. One of the JPL programmers is here, and it's urgent. Bye."
"But,"
Annie said as he hung up. Jack, in the doorway, said,
"It's not urgent."
"Yeah, I know," Venkat said. "What can I do for you?"
"We were thinking," Jack began. "This rover hack might get kind of detailed. We may have to do a bunch of back-and-forth communication with Watney."
"That's fine," Venkat said. "Take your time. Do it right."
"We could get things done faster with a shorter transmission time," Jack said.
Venkat gave him a puzzled look.
"Do you have a plan for moving Earth and Mars closer together?"
"Earth doesn't have to be involved," Jack said. "Hermes is 73 million kilometers from Mars right now, only 4 light minutes away. Beth Johansson is a great programmer. She could talk Mark through it."
"Out of the question," Venkat said.
"She's the mission Sysop," Jack pressed on. "This is her exact area of expertise."
"Can't do it, Jack. The crew still doesn't know."
"What is with you? Why won't you just tell them?"
"Watney's not my only responsibility," Venkat said. "I've got 5 other astronauts in deep space who have to concentrate on their return trip. Nobody thinks about it, but statistically, they're in more danger than Watney right now. He's on a planet. They're in space."
Jack shrugged. "Fine, we'll do it the slow way."
Log entry. Sol 98, 2. Ever transcribed 141 random bytes, one half of a byte at a time? It's boring.
and it's tricky when you don't have a pen. Earlier I'd just written letters in the sand, but this time I needed a way to get the numbers onto something portable. My first plan was use a laptop. Each crewman had their own laptop, so I have six at my disposal. Rather, I had six. I now have five. I thought a laptop would be fine outside. It's just electronics, right? It'll keep warm enough to operate in the short term, and it doesn't need air for anything. It died instantly. The screen went black before I was out of the airlock. Turns out the L in LCD stands for liquid. I guess it either froze or boiled off. Maybe I'll post a consumer review. Brought product to surface of Mars. It stopped working. 0 out of 10. So I used a camera. I've got lots of them, specially made for working on Mars. I wrote the bytes in the sand as they came in, took a picture, then transcribed them in the hab. It's night now, so no more messages. Tomorrow I'll enter this into the rover and the geeks at JPL can take it from there. A notable smell hung in the air of the makeshift Pathfinder control room. The ventilation system was not designed for so many people, and everyone had been working every waking moment without much time for personal hygiene.
"Come on up here, Jack," said Venkat. "You get to be the most Timward today."
"Thanks," said Jack, taking Venkat's place next to Tim.
"Hey, you Tim?"
"Jack," said Tim.
"How long will the patch take?" Venkat asked.
"Should be pretty much instant," Jack answered. "Watney entered the hack earlier today, and we confirmed it worked. We updated Pathfinder's OS without any problem. We sent the rover patch, which Pathfinder rebroadcast. Once Watney executes the patch and reboots the rover, we should get a connection."
"Jesus, what a complicated process," Venkat said.
"Try updating a Linux server sometime," Jack said.
After a moment of silence, Tim said, "You know he was telling a joke, right? That was supposed to be funny."
"Oh," said Venkat. "I'm a physics guy, not a computer guy." "He's not funny to computer guys either."
"You're a very unpleasant man, Tim," Jack said.
"System's online," said Tim.
"What?"
"It's online, FYI.
"Holy crap," Jack said.
"It worked,"
Venkat announced to the room.
1100 hours, 18 minutes. JPL.
"Mark, this is Venkat Kapoor. We've been watching you since Sol 49. The whole world's been rooting for you. Amazing job getting Pathfinder. We're working on rescue plans. JPL is adjusting Ares 4's MDV to do a short overland flight. They'll pick you up, then take you with them to Schiaparelli. We're putting together a supply mission to keep you fed till Ares 4 arrives."
1100 hours, 29 minutes. Watney.
"Glad to hear it. Really looking forward to not dying. I want to make it clear it wasn't the crew's fault. Side question. What did they say when they found out I was alive? Also, hi, Mom."
1100 hours, 41 minutes. JPL.
"Tell us about your crops. We estimated your food packs would last until Sol 400 at 3/4 ration per meal. Will your crops affect that number? As to your question, we haven't told the crew you're alive yet. We wanted them to concentrate on their own mission."
1100 hours, 52 minutes. Watney.
"The crops are potatoes grown from the ones we were supposed to prepare on Thanksgiving. They're doing great, but the available farmland isn't enough for sustainability. I'll run out of food around Sol 900. Also, tell the crew I'm alive. What the fuck is wrong with you?"
1200 hours, 4 minutes. JPL.
"We'll get botanists in to ask detailed questions and double-check your work. Your life is at stake, so we want to be sure. Sol 900 is great news. It'll give us a lot more time to get the supply mission together. Also, please watch your language. Everything you type is being broadcast live all over the world."
1200 hours, 15 minutes. Watney.
"Look,
boobies."
"Thank you, Mr. President," Teddy said into the phone. "I appreciate the call, and I'll pass your congratulations on to the whole organization."
He terminated the call and put his phone on the corner of his desk, flush with the desktop's edges. Mitch knocked on the open door to the office.
"This a good time?" Mitch asked. "Come in, Mitch," Teddy said. "Have a seat."
"Thanks," Mitch said, sitting in a fine leather couch. He reached up to his earpiece and lowered the volume.
"How's mission control?" Teddy asked. "Fantastic," Mitch said. "All's well with Hermes, and everyone's in great spirits thanks to what's going on at JPL. Today was a damn good day for a change."
"Yes, it was," Teddy agreed.
"Another step closer to getting Watney back alive."
"Yeah, about that," said Mitch. "You probably know why I'm here."
"I can take a guess," said Teddy.
"You want to tell the crew Watney's alive?"
"Yes," Mitch said.
"And you're bringing this up with me while Venkat is in Pasadena so he can't argue the other side."
"I shouldn't have to clear this with you or Venkat or anyone else. I'm the flight director. It should have been my call from the beginning, but you two stepped in and overrode me. Ignoring all that, we agreed we'd tell them when there was hope, and now there's hope. We've got communication, we have a plan for rescue in the works, and his farm buys us enough time to get him supplies."
"Okay, tell them," Teddy said.
Mitch paused.
"Just like that?"
"I knew you'd be here sooner or later, so I already thought it through and decided. Go ahead and tell them."
Mitch stood up.
"All right. Thanks," he said as he left the office.
Teddy swiveled in his chair and looked out his windows to the night sky. He pondered the faint red dot among the stars.
"Hang in there, Watney," he said. "We're coming."
Chapter 12. Watney slept peacefully in his bunk. He shifted slightly as some pleasant dream put a smile on his face. He'd done 3 EVAs the previous day, all filled with labor-intensive HAB maintenance, so he slept deeper and better than he had in a long time.
"Good morning, crew," Lewis called out. "It's a brand new day. Sol 6, up and at 'em."
Watney added his voice to a chorus of groans.
"Come on," Lewis prodded. "No bitching. You got 40 minutes more sleep than you would have on Earth."
Martinez was first out of his bunk. An Air Force man, he could match Lewis's Navy schedule with ease.
"Morning, Commander," he said crisply.
Johansson sat up, but made no further move toward the harsh world outside her blankets. A career software engineer, mornings were never her forte. Vogel slowly lumbered from his bunk, checking his watch. He wordlessly pulled on his jumpsuit, smoothing out what wrinkles he could. He sighed inwardly at the grimy feeling of another day without a shower. Watney turned away, hugging a pillow to his head.
"Noisy people, go away," he mumbled.
"Beck," Martinez called out, shaking the mission's doctor. "Rise and shine, bud."
"Yeah, okay," Beck said blearily.
Johansson fell out of her bunk, then remained on the floor. Pulling the pillow from Watney's hands, Lewis said,
"Let's move, Watney. Uncle Sam paid $100,000 for every second we'll be here."
"Bad woman take pillow," Watney groaned, unwilling to open his eyes.
"Back on Earth, I've tipped 200-pound men out of their bunks. Want to see what I can do in 0.4G?
"No, not really," Watney said, sitting up.
Having rousted the troops, Lewis sat at the comm station to check overnight messages from Houston. Watney shuffled to the ration cupboard and grabbed a breakfast at random.
"Hand me an eggs, will you?" Martinez said.
"You can tell the difference?"
Watney said, passing Martinez a pack.
"Not really,"
Martinez said.
"Beck, what do you have?"
Watney continued.
"Don't care," Beck said. "Give me whatever."
Watney tossed a pack to him.
"Vogel, your usual sausages?"
"Yeah, please," Vogel responded.
"You know you're a stereotype, right?"
"I'm comfortable with that,"
Vogel replied, taking the proffered breakfast.
"Hey, Sunshine," Watney called to Johansson. "Eating breakfast today?"
Johansson grunted. "Pretty sure that's a no," Watney guessed. The crew ate in silence. Johansson eventually trudged to the ration cupboard and got a coffee packet. She clumsily added hot water, then sipped until wakefulness crept in.
"Mission updates from Houston," Lewis said. "Satellites show a storm coming, but we can do surface ops before it gets here. Vogel, Martinez, You'll be with me outside. Johansson, you're stuck tracking weather reports. Watney, your soil experiments are bumped up to today. Beck, run the samples from yesterday's EVA through the spectrometer.
Should you really go out with a storm on the way?
Beck asked.
Houston authorized it, Lewis said.
Seems needlessly dangerous.
Coming to Mars was needlessly dangerous, Lewis said. What's your point?
Beck shrugged.
Just be careful.
Three figures looked eastward. Their bulky EVA suits rendered them nearly identical. Only the European Union flag on Vogel's shoulder distinguished him from Lewis and Martinez, who wore the stars and stripes. The darkness to the east undulated and flickered in the rays of the rising sun.
"The storm," Vogel said in his accented English. "It is closer than Houston reported."
"We've got time," Lewis said. "Focus on the task at hand. This EVA's all about chemical analysis. Vogel, you're the chemist, so you're in charge of what we dig up."
"Yeah," Vogel said. "Please dig 30 centimeters and get soil samples. At least 100 grams each. Very important is 30 centimeters down."
"Will do," Lewis said. "Stay within 100 meters of the hab," she added.
Vogel said.
"Yes, ma'am," said Martinez.
They split up. Greatly improved since the days of Apollo, Ares' EVA suits allowed much more freedom of motion. Digging, bending over, and bagging samples were trivial tasks. After a time, Lewis asked, "How many samples do you need?"
7 each, perhaps.
"That's fine," Lewis confirmed. "I've got 4 so far."
5 here, Martinez said. "Of course, we can't expect the Navy to keep up with the Air Force, now can we?"
"So that's how you want to play it?" Lewis said.
"Just call him as I see him, Commander."
"Johansson here."
The Cysop's voice came over the radio.
"Houston's upgraded the storm to severe. It's going to be here in 15 minutes.
"Back to base," Lewis said.
The hab shook in the roaring wind as the astronauts huddled in the center. All 6 of them now wore their flight spacesuits in case they had to scramble for an emergency takeoff in the MAV. Johansson watched her laptop while the rest watched her.
"Sustained winds over 100 kilometers per hour now," she said. "Gusting to 125.
"Jesus, we're going to end up in Oz," Watney said.
"What's the abort wind speed?"
"Technically 150 kilometers per hour," Martinez said. "Any more than that, and the MAV's in danger of tipping."
"Any predictions on the storm track?" Lewis asked.
"This is the edge of it," Johansson said, staring at her screen. "It's going to get worse before it gets better."
The hab canvas rippled under the brutal assault as the internal supports bent and shivered with each gust. The cacophony grew louder by the minute.
"All right," Lewis said. "Prep for abort. We'll go to the MAV and hope for the best. If the wind gets too high, we'll launch."
Leaving the hab in pairs, they grouped up outside Airlock 1. The driving wind and sand battered them, but they were able to stay on their feet.
"Visibility is almost 0, Lewis said. "If you get lost, home in on my suit's telemetry. The wind's going to be rougher away from the hab, so be ready."
Pressing through the gale, they stumbled toward the MAV, with Lewis and Beck in the lead and Watney and Johansson bringing up the rear.
"Hey," Watney panted. "Maybe we could shore up the MAV, make tipping less likely."
"How?"
Lewis huffed.
"We could use cables from the solar farm as guy lines."
He wheezed for a few moments, then continued.
"The rovers could be anchors. The trick would be getting the line around the..."
Flying wreckage slammed Watney, carrying him off into the wind.
"Watney!"
Johansson exclaimed.
"What happened?" Lewis said. "Something hit him,"
Johansson reported.
"Watney, report," Lewis said.
No reply.
"Watney, report,"
Lewis repeated. Again, she was met with silence.
"He's offline," Johansson reported. "I don't know where he is."
"Commander," Beck said. "Before we lost telemetry, his decompression alarm went off."
"Shit," Lewis exclaimed. "Johansson, where did you last see him?" "He was right in front of me and then he was gone," she said. "He flew off, due west."
"Okay," Lewis said. "Martinez, get to the MAV and prep for launch. Everyone else, home in on Johansson."
"Dr. Beck,"
Vogel said as he stumbled through the storm.
"How long could a person survive decompression?"
"Less than a minute,"
Beck said, emotion choking his voice.
"I can't see anything,"
Johansson said as the crew crowded around her.
"Line up and walk west," Lewis commanded. "Small steps. He's probably prone.
We don't want to step over him.
Staying in sight of one another, they trudged through the chaos. Martinez fell into the MAV airlock and forced it closed against the wind. Once it